Joey and Young Mr. Tom by Roy Trumbull, copyright 2009. Joey had an assignment from his teacher to read a biography and report on it in class. After some consideration, he settled on Thomas Edison, one of the most remarkable inventors of all time. Joey cheated a little by downloading an audiobook of an Edison biography to his bone pod. The bone pod wasn't too good for music, as it used bone conduction to convey sound, but it worked better in the presence of noise, and you didn't have to tinker with an earpiece. An added advantage was, since the ear wasn't blocked, you could hear cars coming. Joey was good at multitasking. While he was listening to a chapter of the Edison book, he was also reading about the Civil War in his pathetic history book. The important things might get a sentence, a paragraph at the most. Really important things were completely missing. Joey had figured out that history books were copied from earlier history books. If the first author got it wrong, it stayed wrong. God forbid the latest author should go back and check primary sources. Joey was sure that kids who cheated on tests ended up writing school textbooks when they grew up. Eventually, as the evening wore on, Joey found Edison and the Civil War were starting to merge. When the two got thoroughly entangled, he figured it was time for bed. When Joey awoke, he felt a regular rhythm and sway and heard a clickety-clack. He was next to a window, and upon looking out, he realized he was in motion and watching the countryside pass by. He thought, "I must be on a train." Across from him was a boy his age, or perhaps a few years older, using tweezers to position something small into a frame. The boy looked up and said, "Why aren't you in the passenger car selling papers?" Joey tried to take the measure of this rather rough-cut fellow addressing him. His clothes were plain, like you might wear out in the country. His hair hadn't seen a comb in some time. They were in a car with baggage and mail sacks. Some shelves and a desk had been created out of scrap lumber in the corner of the car. Some of the shelves were kind of like his mother's spice rack. They were lined with small bottles, each bearing a skull and crossbones. He could see beakers and test tubes. It was like a chemistry lab. It was a chemistry lab. On the floor, there were boxes containing bread, tobacco, stick candy, and magazines. Joey realized that under his arm he had a stack of newspapers. "We've got a whole carload of Norwegian immigrants. Put down those papers and take the bread and the stick candy. They're usually a hungry bunch." Joey did as he was told, but froze a minute when he saw a small calendar pinned to the wall. It said, "April, 1862. And take those two magazines with the covers torn off to Moses." "Moses? You'll find him in the smoking car cleaning up." Joey reached into his pocket to see if he had any change. He recognized what looked like dimes, but there were some similar coins marked half dimes, plus a few pennies. "This must be a dream," thought Joey. "Might as well play along," so he said, "Sure thing, Tom." It was just like in the book. Young Thomas Edison was setting type and getting ready to print his newspaper, the Weekly Herald, and he'd moved his chemistry lab from his home to the train. Joey made his way through the Norwegians and sold bread and candy. At the far end of the car, working with a dustpan and a broom, was an old man. Joey reasoned he must be Moses. "Tom said to give these magazines to you." "Tell Mr. Tom I appreciate the favor. I don't think I seed you afore. Is you Mr. Tom's new assistant?" Joey told him he was. "And what might be your name?"
"I'm Joey."
"Would it be okay if I called you Mr. Joseph?"
"Sure."
Joey thought it sounded all grown up.
"You don't sound like folks from around here. Might ask where you from?"
"I'm from California."
Ah, the new state. You heard tell of a Reverend King out there? Reverend Star King?
No, I don't think I have.
Shoot, young fella, everyone should know Reverend King.
Why?
Well, sir, without him, California would be back in the Confederacy. California might be a slave state. I heard tell he's a young fella, kind of frail, but's got a booming voice people listen to. Not only did he support the Union, he raised money for food and blankets for the soldiers.
Doesn't the government supply them?
The government pay fellas who supply rotten food what no one can eat, and blankets and sich get paid for but never get to the men. Thinking of some of the things his father and his father's friends had said about the contractors in Iraq, he realized not much had changed since 1862.
What part of California are you from?
Just north of San Francisco. That's the very place Reverend King is. You ought to go hear him speak. Joey did a little fancy thinking. He knew the Golden Gate Bridge had been built when his grandfather was a boy. How did you get to San Francisco before that? Then he said, to get there I'd have to take a train and a ferry boat.
Well, I suggest you do that if you're going back soon.
I guess I'm going back, or at least I hope I'm going back.
Have you worked for the railroad long?
I've been with them a while. That goes from Port Huron to Detroit and back. But that's just 2 hours each way, so I do other work in Detroit.
Is that for the railroad?
In a matter of speaking. I often work for the one without tracks.
Without tracks?
Being from out west, maybe you ain't heard tell of the Underground Railroad.
It's about slaves, isn't it?
Yes, slaves headed north. Some 10 years back, the government passed the Fugitive Slave Act. If you escape and come north, they can pay a man to find you and take you back, even if she's in a free state. Detroit is right at the Canadian border. A man get to Detroit, folks will get him across. Then he's safe.
Is there some kind of organized group that does that?
Organized? I wouldn't go so far as to say that. It's just people who believe slavery is wrong, and they want to do the right thing. Beatings, splitting up families, taking small children from their mothers, keeping folks ignorant, that ain't right, and they's knowed it.
How do slaves find those people?
Oh, there's places they're told about, a person to look for.
How do they get north?
Oh, rivers work pretty well if you travel the banks at night and walk in the shallows so the dogs lose your scent. And then you just follow the drinking gourd.
The drinking gourd?
Pardon, I forget. You call it the Big Dipper. Everyone knows you follow it to go north. There's stations along the Underground Railway where folks will hide you and give you something to eat before you go on. Them folks risk everything just to be kind. I don't know whether I gets to go to heaven, but if I have to wait in line behind folks like that, that's okay by me.
Alongside the tracks ran poles carrying telegraph wires. Each station had a telegraph operator. The combination of short and long pulses sent by a telegraph key were heard up and down the line by means of sounders. If a train had to be held on a siding so another train could go by, that information was sent by telegraph. Any schedule changes or expected arrival and departure times were also sent by telegraph. Telegraph was the only means of communications over a distance. In the Civil War, the Union Army and the Confederate Army ran telegraph wires and had telegraph operators. As the train stopped at each station along the way, Joey saw Tom get off the train and go talk to the station's telegraph operator. He usually gave the man a magazine. Then the two of them would come outside and Tom would point to the blackboard that announced the arrival and departure times of trains. Then there was some head nodding and a shaking of hands, and Tom would get back on the train until the next station where he repeated the process. When they got to Detroit, Tom asked Moses to show Joey where the farmer's market was and to introduce him to Danny. Danny would have two baskets of produce Joey was to carry back to the train. Tom had hired another boy to run a produce stand in Port Huron. The fruits and vegetables from farms around Detroit were better than what you could get in Port Huron. Tom could command a premium price for Detroit produce. He was told to meet Tom at 4 o'clock at the Detroit Free Press building. Other than that, he was on his own. Tom headed straight for the library. Moses pointed out the newspaper building. There was a crowd gathered outside. A bulletin board told that 60,000 had been killed and wounded at the Battle of Shiloh. At 3:30, Tom went there and copied down the headlines and took them to the train station, gave them to the telegraph operator who sent them to the stations along the Grand Trunk Line to Port Huron. It was hoped the operator at each station would then write them on his blackboard. Tom went in to see the editor of the newspaper. He knew he'd sell a lot of papers that day, but had only enough cash to buy 300. He wanted 1,000. He needed credit. He stated his case to two men in the editorial office. The first said, no credit. The second, William Story by name, said, okay, kid, I'll trust you this one time. After Tom left, the first man said, why did you do that? I sense the kid's got ambition, and I'm willing to encourage it. Bet you a cigar he pays up. Tom and Joey made several trips between the newspaper and the train station, but they finally had all the newspapers loaded onto the baggage car just in time for the train to pull out onto the Grand Trunk Line to Port Huron. The first station where Tom said he was lucky to sell 7 papers, there was a crowd gathered, and he sold 80 papers. And so it was as they went to each station. Getting the telegraph operators to post the headlines had worked much better than expected. Now he was afraid that 1,000 papers wasn't enough. 3 stations down the line, he raised the price to 10, and then to 15 cents. Everyone wanted the news. The higher price didn't kill sales. As they were coming into Port Huron, Tom told him, let's get all the remaining bundles of papers by the door. When we're about 1/4 mile from the station, I'm going to slide the door open. The train slows down because of the switch tracks. The road into town runs right next to the rails. I've built up a pile of sand there, and I'm going to jump out. You toss the bundles out as fast as you can. My friend Michael will be waiting with a pony cart, and he'll take me downtown. Then he'll meet you at the station and pick up the produce. I think the price of a newspaper has just gone up to 25 cents. So saying, he undid the latch and slid the door open. Joey could feel the train slowing. Tom spotted some landmark and started counting, and then he said, now! And with that, he leaped out into the night. Joey pitched the bundles of newspaper out into the dark. He looked for Tom, but he couldn't see him. It was pitch black. He hoped he was okay. He tried to imagine a world without light bulbs and records and movies and thousands of other things Tom would invent. Then he heard a voice calling, Joey, 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 time to get up. It's a school day. Get up. It was a dream after all. But he was sure he'd never heard of Star King before. Next chance he got, he'd Google the name.